welcome to Potter Revisited episode 68. I'm Tori.
And I'm Shay.
Today we are jumping into chapter 8, the Quidditch World Cup.
Or, as we like to call it, he caught the snitch but dropped the ball.
We're going into this, the excitement of like walking into the stadium and stuff reminds me of just going to hockey games as a kid. My dad used to take us to them and I'm not a sports person, but there is something about just seeing an event like hockey or whatever live and just being in the stadium and all the people that are so excited and there's so much stuff to look at. The atmosphere is just so, it's so fun.
I love live sporting events. It's just such an atmosphere. I think it's like part of it is like, it's so rare, first of all, to be around that many people, but that many people either directly rooting for the same outcome in something where that's the entirety of their focus. Like you're not working in the stands, but it's like you're all still working towards the same goal of your team winning or the fans of the other team. You know what I mean? Like it's like a feeling of camaraderie with all the people in the audience and like the like endorphins are contagious, you know, like everyone's getting hyped. You get more hyped by seeing people being hyped and you're all rooting for the same thing. So it's such a big outburst of joy when there's a goal or when the win happens or a great play. It's just so rare to feel that much like consistent emotion coming from so many people at once. And it just like overflows. And it's just like,
yeah,
it's a weird sense of harmony in the chaos. And they have incredible seats. Like they're talking about these seats. And first of all, they're going all the way up to the top box. And the presence of the Malfoys alone tells us that that's higher is better in the Quidditch. So it's not like the game happens a lot low down in the grass. It's higher in the sky where the good stuff's happening.
Yeah.
So it's the equivalent of like lower bowl seats at like a hockey game where you're closer to the ice.
Yeah, like VIP seats.
And they're center. They're dead center, like across from the scoreboard, which is like the ultimate, like they're at the center line. That's where a lot of the stuff's happening. That's where switching zones. They have the best seats in the house. They're right by the minister. So not only are they like really expensive seats, they're really politically advantageous seats.
Oh, yeah.
So good on you. Good on you guys.
Luda really, you know, rubbed some fingers or whatever the saying is. I don't know.
He greased some palms. He paid someone off.
Yeah, that's the phrase I'm looking for. Giving Arthur those seats.
Yeah, Arthur must have really helped his friend out.
His brother, yeah.
But I also think it's funny that we hear about the ads on the scoreboard.
Yes, I love the ads.
I think that's so, so funny because it's very realistic. I mean, the boards at hockey games covered in ads, the scoreboard during the intermission covered in ads. I just think it's so not beautiful, but hilarious that capitalism isn't just for muggles, you know? Gotta sell that potion. Also, I didn't notice this while reading the book, but I was scrolling through my Facebook before and I saw a picture of Harry next to Ginny at the Quidditch World Cup from the movies. And in the movies, he's wearing a Bulgaria hat and a Bulgaria scarf. But in the books, it's exclusively Irish merch for all of them except for the little Victor Crumbs. And I was like, that's scandalous. They just completely switched what team Harry was like repping with his merch.
I find it weird that I guess the movie was just kind of like dressing them up like they're going to like a sporting event. But like the fact that they aren't all cheering for the same team, I feel like that's...
I mean, like, it happens sometimes. Like, for sure, if I went to a hockey game with your family at some point in my life, I'd be in my Habs merch, assuming it's a Habs game. They'd be in their Leafs merch, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, it's just weird to me that they made that change for the movie. Like, why would they change that? It was...
I mean, they didn't focus a lot on the actual Quidditch in the movie. It was just, like, a blip.
Then why did they put Harry in Bulgaria merch? I just don't get it. Like, they wanted to remind people who the other team was or that there was another team. So they're like, we'll put Harry in a different color than Ron. That'll get the point across. But I think that's dumb. He was cheering for Ireland. Let him cheer for Ireland.
I think the cool thing is that when Harry's in his seat, he sees a house elf and he just assumes that it's Dobby.
I mean, I guess it's the only, he's only ever seen one house elf. So he probably doesn't have a comparison for like what common house elf traits are or...
I feel like also he just wants to see Dobby, which is, it's just a nice throwback.
He's like, man, I wish Dobby was here. Dobby would love those Ireland socks.
But it's just like, obviously going to remind us that like, oh yeah, there's house elves and like they exist. And we're introduced to Winky, who is kind of like the opposite of Dobby.
Yep.
Where she's just very loyal to her master. And she's like what she says is a proper house elf. As when... She knows who Harry is because Dobby talks about him all the time, which I thought was really cute.
She's deeply, deeply indoctrinated into like this subservient mindset that seems to be encouraged in house elves. And it's kind of really sad to see it.
Oh, yeah.
It's super sad. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, she tells Harry that he didn't do Dobby a favor freeing him because he's asking for money now. And Harry's just like, oh, well, he kind of... probably deserves that.
He should be asking for money. Like, if he's gonna work.
And then when he's like scandalized, it also kind of shows that like Ron is kind of like just like oblivious of this. And I think later in the next chapter, they'll talk about House Elves more. But it's just the idea that it's just the way things are.
Yeah.
That's how she's used to it. And all the wizards are just like, yeah, that's the way of things are. And no one thinks that, oh, that's kind of like slavery.
That's horrible. What the heck?
And it takes Hermione being like, wow, this is really stupid.
Poor Winky is horrified up there. She's afraid of heights. And she's staying there terrified, peeking through her fingers to be a good house elf and listen to her human. And like, it's just so, it's so sad.
And we also get Cornelius Fudge comes in and Percy's being super embarrassing per usual. And he, I guess he like bows to the minister and breaks his glasses. Like, oh, Percy, why are you doing this to me? I get so much secondhand embarrassment.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe you're supposed to bow to the minister. Like maybe it's like the queen.
I think that's just the way Percy is. He like bows to Mr. Crouch.
Yeah, okay. He shouldn't be bowing.
Yeah.
He really admires him and he wants to make sure he doesn't treat him with less propriety and respect than he deserves. So he way overcompensates.
And it's really awkward because Fudge greets Harry like an old friend and Percy's like really like jealous because Percy just wants to like, you know, meet people and good impressions and like...
He wants to have a personable interaction and be remembered by people in power. And Harry's just like, oh, great, this guy. Percy's like someone who underappreciates something that you would long for so deeply and wish you had so much. I can see why Percy would feel some resentment there. Not that it's Harry's fault. Like, I can see why Percy's having a rough go of it. His own boss doesn't know his name and the Minister of Magic's fangirling Harry.
Well, it's also Harry's like politically like... good right now. Like he's using Harry to like, oh, like this is Harry to like the other ministers, using him as like more of like a political talking point,
celebrity endorsement. He's like, Harry loves me, you know. Harry, he's very famous.
It's also interesting because he greets Harry so nicely, and knowing how things change in this book, it's like when Harry's no longer politically okay,
when he's a convenient tool to make yourself look better, he's cool. But when he's a inconvenience that makes you look bad, suddenly it's time to vilify Harry.
But we also get the Malfoys come in, of course, because Lucius, you know, just happens to like, you know, just throw money at the right places. So we get a hint to St. Mungo's, as that's where Lucius donated all this money.
Yeah.
And some awkward Lucius and Arthur interactions.
Well, Lucius is in the second row, so Arthur has better seats. So suck it, Lucius, first of all. I love how they describe Narcissa, too. They're like, she's very pretty, if she didn't look like she could just smelt something horrible. I'm like, that's the vibe.
I love it.
She's like, there's middle class people here. Are we really going to sit near the middle class people?
Before like the game begins, they introduce the mascots for the teams, Ireland and Bulgaria, which is interesting because Mr. Weasley says it's like creatures from their native lands.
Yeah, but it's Vila for Bulgaria. And like, to me, the Vila, I mean, clearly they aren't just human. They can change their forms, and obviously they have some mystical abilities, but they seem pretty close to being human. They have the energy of human. It just seems weird that they are referred to as creatures. Like, maybe Arthur didn't know what was coming, and in his mind, like, it might have been a dragon, it might have been a Bulgarian horned toad frog. Like, he didn't know it was going to be Vila, which in my mind really do sound very similar to humans, so it just seems a little bit degrading.
Yeah, they remind me kind of like sirens with like the ability to kind of bewitch people, but it also makes me kind of uncomfortable because they're seen as like, I mean, the way the series in general handles creatures is really weird.
Yeah,
there's a really weird class system, but yeah, it does feel kind of odd that like they're obviously women, and Harry describes them as like beautiful women, but like they're seen as like subhuman and then like less than, and it's kind of like uncomfy.
Yeah, I agree. I also think it's weird that like in the hindsight, both of the mascots, the Irish mascot is a bunch of little leprechauns flying around to form big things. It's basically cheerleaders and fireworks, like is basically what it comes down to, which are typical things you might see at like a outdoor sporting event. Like can't have obviously fireworks in a hockey arena, but at like a football game or a British football game or baseball, maybe. Like fireworks make sense. Cheerleaders are common. I think that's funny.
So when the Vilas come out, a lot of like the men are just kind of like transfixed and they're bewitched and stuff. And Harry has this thought where he's just like, I'm going to jump out of the stadium. That'll impress them. And I'm wondering if there should be kind of some kind of like security, because what if someone did jump from the stadium or jump from the stands into the stadium?
Yeah, I honestly think the Vila are a risk. Like, they shouldn't be allowed out there during gameplay because they can transfix people. And, like, what if they transfixed one of the Irish players and he got distracted and Bulgaria scored? Like, to me, that's against the sanctity of the game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, later on, they do kind of get involved, but yeah, we'll talk about that later.
One of the other things I wonder is that when Harry and Ron and everyone is transfixed by the Vila, Hermione isn't. And it makes me wonder, does the Vila's song only work on men, or does the Vila song only work on people who are attracted to women? Because it seems like a, ooh, they're so beautiful, I've forgotten all. Like, it seems like it's attraction-based.
I mean, this series is pretty heteronormative, I find. Like, the author kind of was like, after the series was done, it was like, well, by the way, Dumbledore's gay, but none of, like, the characters were written to be a part of the community.
But just, like, the only character whose perspective we have who's a female here is Hermione, and she's not affected. And, like, okay, maybe she's straight, but I'd like to know, like, where are the bisexual and lesbian women at, and are they transfixed? I'm curious how Vila magic works.
I would assume it would just be if you were attracted or not. That makes sense to me. But I feel like it was written to be like, oh, very just heteronormative. Like, all men are transfixed by the beautiful women and females are not because they're jealous because of the patriarchy or whatever.
I'd like to think that my bisexual ass would be like, ooh, and you'd have to yoink me back. Because if they're magic, I'm not, you know.
It's not your fault.
I don't think I would jump off of the top row of the Quidditch pitch, though. That seems dangerous. Clearly, we're learning early on Harry has subpar abilities to impress women. If he thinks, maybe I'll die, they'll love that, right?
Well, he does that all the time.
What if the chosen one died for them? How romantic.
What would Dumbledore do if he's like, I was raising this kid to defeat the Dark Lord, and he just, like, jumped off a balcony to impress a girl?
He yeeted himself off a balcony because he saw a pretty blonde lady. We're all doomed.
But first, this is like the game starting, and this is Harry's, I think, first time really watching Quidditch and just watching professional Quidditch.
Yeah, it's really interesting because Harry, obviously, it's not like, as far as we know, they don't televise Quidditch games because television is for muggles. So really the only Quidditch games Harry's seen are like Hufflepuff versus Ravenclaw or whatever at Hogwarts. And so he's never seen elite professional level Quidditch players play. And that's got to be so exciting to see, like, how the game you love is at its very best. Like, that's got to be such a thrill, on top of the fact that he's, like, learning things like techniques and skills that he just has never seen before. He's like, wow, the Waraski feint, that's cool. I can learn about it. Like, it's got to be so fun for someone who loves their sport that much to finally get to go see it, to see it on the biggest stage, the international gold medal game or whatever. The best of the best, and one of the best in the world in his particular position of the sport, too, is just such a joy. And I get so excited for Harry, just like...
Yeah, he definitely is transfixed by Crumb. Like, Ron's really into him and excited, but Harry is, like, seeing this guy who's just, like, amazing, and it makes him want to be, like, a better seeker and everything.
Yeah.
And it's, like, cool him being able to kind of, like, see that for the first time.
Yeah, it's really, really, really exciting.
Going back to my point about the Vilas being kind of, like, a hindrance on the game.
The frickin' ref. Yeah, seriously, They use their magic charms on the ref and he gets distracted. And because the reaction of people when they're under the Vila's spell is to try and be impressive, he's like caressing his mustache and flexing. And I just, this is the most embarrassing thing I can ever imagine. And I would be so traumatized, I would die.
Yeah, I would move into become a hermit, never to be seen again. He gets caught, like, as one of the Muddy Wizards or whatever, smacks him and he comes to, and then he's obviously, like, super embarrassed and really mad at the Vilas, so he tries to get them, like, removed from the game.
Because they are a risk and a liability and should not be out there during gameplay. That's cheating.
It's also funny, too, the leprechauns are also, like, they're forming little, like, signs in the sky, and I think at one point they definitely 100% form a finger, like, flipping off the Bulgarian. Get the Bulgarian supporters.
I believe it's described as like a unkind gesture or something. But yeah, it's definitely.
That's 100% the finger. That's when the Vilas get like super mad and they turn kind of like bird-like and they start throwing fire and stuff.
Sharp, angry features. They're throwing balls of fire. Yeah.
And Mr. Weasley has this great quote where he's like, and that, boys, is why you should never go for looks alone.
Mr. Weasley with the jokes.
I love it.
Yeah, you don't know if she's the girl for you if you don't see how she reacts when she's kicked off the sporting field.
Well, you kind of get it because Mrs. Weasley has a short fuse.
I think Miss Weasley could beat up a Vila. She's scary.
But looking back, I think all of the Weasley boys end up with women that have a temper or have a fuse or whatever, or just like strong women, I should say.
They're raised by a strong woman, so they respect that.
Going into the rest of the game, I'll let Shay handle that because I know nothing about sports.
So basically, the game ends when Victor Krem decides to catch the snitch because he's all bloody and the ref doesn't call the foul, and so he catches the snitch.
Well, he's a little distracted because I think one of the Vilas lit his brew on fire.
So anyhow, Victor Krem catches the snitch, which Hermione thinks is very brave, which is our first moment of Hermione saying something positive about Krem, because before she thought he looked grumpy. And now she's like, well, he's very brave. And I'm like, oh, our girl loves a Gryffindor heart. She's like, show me your Gryffindor traits and I am interested.
Well, yeah, because he's flying around with a broken nose.
But we have to talk about this Victor Krem catching the snitch business, because they say the final score was 160 to 170. So they had the one Bulgarian goal plus the 150 points for the snitch, and then the 170 points for Ireland were all proper goals. Why did Krem catch the snitch? And everyone says, oh, it's because he knew they weren't going to win. And I'm like, no, he didn't know that at all. This game has not been going on for that long. Like, we've gotten a bit of a tidbit, like, 15 minutes later, blah, blah. Like, this game has not been going on for hours or anything. And they're behind by one goal plus Krem catching the snitch, right? He's saying he has no faith his team can score one goal. Like, to me, you have to wait a while and give them that opportunity to at least try. He's obviously a way better seeker, so he can actively just try and prevent the Irish seeker from getting the snitch for a little while and give his team that chance. He basically unanimously decided, my team doesn't stand a chance, I'm ending this game. And I can't imagine a coach being okay with that decision. Like, I've seen horrible, horrible hockey games where the team is absolutely losing. And like, sometimes, yeah, you pull your starting goalie, he doesn't need that on his ego, and you send in your backup. But like, you don't do that when you're down by one goal. You know what I mean? That's not how that works. And I can't imagine the coach not being furious, let alone the Bulgarian Minister of Magic not being furious. And he seemed fine with it. The teammates of Krem not being furious. Like, that's just bad sport. And I don't know if the author just like doesn't follow sports enough or didn't math out her own goal situation to realize.
Yeah, I feel like it's hard because she has to write all these Quidditch games throughout the series. And this one needed to be, it had to be different. So it stands out from all like the Hogwarts ones, but it also had to be like different in the fact that this is a professional game. And then it had to tie in the fact that like the Weasley twins also get like their bet.
Yeah, but that's a stupid bet to begin with, kind of. Like, to me, Victor Krem catching the snitch despite his team not having enough points to win after makes sense if the game is running really long. If they've been playing for a few hours, if they know there's no hope, if there's more than a snitch plus one goal difference. You know what I mean? Like, they were, like, if the Irish scored a few more goals and they were, say, five full goals ahead or 50 points ahead, then fine. Yes, you're right. That's a lot to expect from your team who isn't scoring a lot. But he bet on them not being able to score a single other goal that early on. And that's just bad sports. Like, wait a while. Try a few plays. Don't just quit. Don't just decide to quit. Like, it's just bad sport. I'm sorry. And I'm really frustrated by it because, like, they act like it's totally fine and it makes sense. And I'm like, no, that's really stupid. Like, you talk about hockey skill and you talk about hockey sense, and that's bad hockey sense. You don't do that. The game is not over yet. Anyhow, it frustrates me from that perspective. But, like, it's just like he caught the snitch and he dropped the ball. You know what I mean? It doesn't make any sense how supportive the Bulgarians are of that choice of Krems. But also, from, like, a international relations, marketing, and, like, a business perspective, it's bad for business to have an international event people have been planning for months end so quickly. Like, it was a short game. It could have been weeks. Someone bet Neil Farm it was going to be weeks. And yet it barely even went a couple hours. To me, like, you're cutting the game short. People are going to feel like they took off work, traveled, tented for days, just to see, like, 2 hours of sport. That seems a bit disappointing.
I mean, I feel like that's always a risk with Quidditch, is, like, the idea that, like, you don't know how long it's going to be.
I guess. And then on top of that, all the vendors, like, the guy selling hot dogs, presumably, is going to sell less hot dogs if the game ends earlier. Like, it just seems like a bad business decision overall.
I feel like this was also kind of put into the idea that, like, catching the snitch doesn't mean your team wins. Because I feel like that gets really confusing with all the Hogwarts games Harry plays, that, like, he always catches a snitch and his team always wins.
Yeah.
So I feel like the author didn't want to do, like, this really in-depth, like, sports thing. Because obviously it's still kind of, like, written for kids at this point.
Yeah.
And she wants to, like, reiterate that, like, oh, yeah, like, this guy caught the snitch, but his team didn't win. Because that's how the game works.
Yeah. It just seems like a dumb time to catch the snitch knowing your team isn't going to win. And I stand by that point.
I'm sure it wasn't written from, like, the sports perspective. It was just kind of like...
Yeah, I guess, but it just seems, like, lazy, kind of, because it's just bad sports. Like, ask a sports fan, like, hey, if you had the choice to end the game immediately knowing you were going to lose, or hang on for a little bit longer knowing that you are the best... seeker, you can catch the snitch more likely than the other guy, and your team needs one more point to tie, one more goal to tie, two more goals to win before you catch the snitch. Maybe do it. Like, I, in Victor Crumb's position, I am not trying to catch the snitch right now. I'm trying to keep the Irish seeker from catching the snitch. It's a defensive game until my team is tied or within enough points that me catching the snitch gets us the win. Like, maybe he's just really bad at math. And, like, I'm really bad at math.
I think it's just more of a control thing. The fact that, like, he would rather them, like, lose, like, for a, have a closer game than, like, Ireland get a bunch more, like, goals and it, like, kind of drag out.
Yeah, and if Ireland was up by, like, 30, 40, 50 points plus the snitch, that's one thing. But I don't know, man. I think it's too soon. I think it's too soon. And I would be so mad at him as a fan of Bulgaria. I'm not. But if I were a fan of Bulgaria, I would be... furious. So the game ends, as we know, and then we find out that the Bulgarian minister has been pretending not to know English the entire day and forcing the English minister of magic to, like, do sign language and try his best and look like an idiot all day just for fun. And that's so funny. And I have a Bulgarian coworker who would have done the same thing in this position, I think. Like, that's entirely the type of sense of humor he has, like, choose chaos.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, that was well written in that the sense of humor is accurate for at least what I know of that sense of humor. I'm like, that's spot on.
It's also the end where Ludo, who's doing the announcing, is like, Ireland win, but Crumb get the snitch. And, like, the twins obviously got this right, so... How did they know? Do the twins have a time turner?
Or maybe they paid someone with a time turner to do a little cheatsy. They paid Hermione
last year
to do a quick whoops-a-daisy. And they're like, listen, the Quidditch World Cup's next year. We'd like to make some money. And at first Hermione was like, no, that's cheating. But then they, I don't know what they did, bribed her. Bribed her. They blackmailed her. They said, we'll tell you the most embarrassing thing we know about Ron if you do us this one favor. And she couldn't say no.
It's also interesting because they obviously... get paid in leprechaun gold, which we kind of skimmed over, but the leprechauns handed out gold, which Ron thinks is real gold, and he gives it to Harry to cover the cost of the
monoculars.
But obviously leprechaun gold disappears, and this is like the start of the twins kind of like blackmail plot that lasts like in the background.
I do kind of wonder if they didn't blackmail Hermione into misusing the time turner, what made the twins go with that particular... Like, they almost hit me as the kind of guys who do advanced sports analytics. Like, I could totally see them mathing the heck out of it from a sports perspective. Like, okay, we know on average the Irish team scores this many goals per game and the Bulgarian team is a low-scoring team, so it's likely to have this kind of difference. And so statistically, blah, blah, blah. And maybe the Bulgarian team has, like, a lower endurance level. So, like, they're better early on in the game and less good later on in the game. So they're, like, chances are... If the Irish come out strong, which maybe they normally do, and get lots of goals early, which they normally do, and they always would outscore what the Bulgarians would score, statistically speaking, the first few minutes or first hour of the game is the most important. And if Bulgaria isn't ahead, Irish are going to win. And we know how good Krem is, so he's probably going to also know that and end the game after they know they don't have a chance, which will happen early. So, like, maybe they did, you know, the analytics of it, which I wouldn't be surprised by. And, like, when I explain it as them, it all makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I still think it's too soon to have caught the snitch, but it makes sense as a feasible outcome, assuming that the Irish are a high-scoring team statistically, the Bulgarians are better in the beginning, don't have a great come-from-behind record, then that checks out.
That's kind of the end of the chapter, so do you have any, like, last-minute wrap-up thoughts before we close out?
It's really sad we didn't get to see this in its glory in the movie. It's not a lot. Like, clearly, it's a very short game, so I kind of think they could have showed us some of it.
There's just a lot in Goblet of Fire to, like, cover, and I feel like I remember this was the first book that they were kind of, like, the director wanted it to be split into two films, but obviously Warner Brothers didn't think that would be, like, it would make money, so they're like, no, we're not doing that.
I think it could have been split into two films, just based on the size of the book, rather, but I think they couldn't do that because, I mean, the kids need time between filming things to, like, live a bit of a life.
There's also the idea of the kids growing up too fast because it takes so long. And it's also the fact that I just don't think at that time, because this was, what, 2004, that Warner Bros. Thought that that would be, like, money, because obviously these films cost a lot of money. And the last one, obviously, it worked because the time worked out and it was the last one. So people would obviously go back to see it. But like having it in like the middle, and then also brought the idea that like if they cut this film in half, they probably had to cut the next ones in half too.
Yeah. And the weird thing about this film cutting it in half is like it would be weird to decide where a half is, because you kind of can't half the actual Triwizard tournament.
That's true.
Like it would be weird to have one challenge and like it would have to end when Harry's name gets drawn out of the cup or something, or like right before the first challenge.
Yeah, it doesn't really have a good split point.
But what I'm looking forward to is slightly more mature Golden Trio, like being a bit more reasonable with their troubleshooting and problem solving. That happens a bit in this, which I like. There's lots of petty childish drama between them, but eventually that. And I hate those parts. I hate when they're fighting. I don't want them to fight. I want them to be happy in friendship forever.
I definitely like all the kind of little like hints going forward, like the fact like we're bringing back Hell's Elves in this book. So a hint that like Dobby's probably going to come back. Meet Winky, who's obviously, I do think like the conversation around Hell's Elves and having Winky there, who represents like Hell's Elves, who are just like, that's their status quo. And that's just what they fundamentally believe in.
You don't realize how special Dobby is until you have something to compare him to.
Yeah. And yeah, things are going to get a bit more serious as the plot thickens in the next few chapters, which I'm excited about. Thanks for listening to this episode of Potter Revisited, and we'll be back next time to discuss Chapter 9 of Goblet of Fire, The Dark Mark. If you have any thoughts on today's episode, you can email us at potterrevisitedpodcast@gmail.com or on social media at Potter Revisited, and we will see you next time.
Bye.